If you have your Bibles open to Proverbs 21, would you follow along with me as I read it for us? The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. Every man's way is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is desired by the Lord more than sacrifice. Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked is sin. Plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty. The acquisition of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor, the pursuit of death. The violence of the wicked will drag them away because they refuse to act with justice. The way of a guilty man is crooked, but as for the pure, his conduct is upright. It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. The soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. When the scoffer is punished, the naive becomes wise. But when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. The righteous one considers the house of the wicked, turning the wicked to ruin. He who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. A gift in secret subdues anger, and a bribe in the bosom strong wrath. The exercise of justice is joy for the righteous, but is terror to the workers of iniquity. A man who wanders from the way of understanding will rest in the assembly of the dead. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. The wicked is a ransom for the righteous, and the treacherous is in the place of the upright. It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. There is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. He who pursues righteousness and loyalty finds life, righteousness, and honor. A wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the stronghold in which they trust. He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. Proud, haughty, scoffer are his names, who acts with insolent pride. The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. All day long he is craving, while the righteous gives and does not hold back. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. How much more when he brings it with evil intent? A false witness will perish, but the man who listens to the truth will speak forever. A wicked man displays a bold face, but as for the upright, he makes his way sure. There is no wisdom and no understanding and no counsel against the Lord. The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord. May the Lord bless the reading of his word this morning. Notice that Proverbs sometimes is simply a group of complete sayings. Even one verse itself is a sermon in itself. So I hope that the Lord will use that in our hearts. We're continuing our study of Elijah's life and ministry and the important lessons we can learn from it. If you can recall from the previous message in the series, we noticed the contrast between Elijah and Obadiah and found from their example that many sincere born-again Christians find themselves in one of two very different groups. You recall from last Sunday, we noticed the Elijah kind of Christian and the Obadiah kind of Christian. That is, those who have courage for God and those who don't have courage for God. Those who know God well and those who don't know him very well. Those who are effective for God and those who aren't effective for God. I pray that if you heard that message, you will commit your heart and life to follow Elijah's example and get to know God well and therefore have courage for God and be effective for God. Before I read the verses we'll study today, let me read for us the last three verses from the portion of this chapter that we studied in the previous message, because these prepare us for what we'll focus on in this message. So 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 17. 1 Kings 18, verse 17. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is this you, you troubler of Israel?" He said, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals. Now then, send and gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." As we can see from verse 19 here, that what follows is the contest on Mount Carmel. And let me continue reading from verse 20. So Ahab sent a message among all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and said, "How long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him." But the people did not answer him a word. Then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Now let them give us two oxen, and let them choose one ox for themselves and cut it up and place it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other ox and lay it on the wood, and I will not put a fire under it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God." And all the people said, "That is a good idea." So Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one ox for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many. And call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it." Then they took the ox which was given them, and they prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, "O Baal, answer us." But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they made. It came about at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, "Call out with a loud voice, for he is a god. Either he is occupied or gone aside or is on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and needs to be awakened." So they cried with a loud voice and cut themselves according to their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out on them. When midday was past, they raved until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. But there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come near to me." So all the people came near to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, "Israel shall be your name." So with the stones, he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar, large enough to hold 2 measures of seed. Then he arranged the wood and cut the ox in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, "Fill 4 pitchers with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood." And he said, "Do it a second time." They did it a second time. And he said, "Do it a third time." And they did it a third time. The water flowed around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. At the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near and said, "O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again." And the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, "The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." Then Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. Would you notice with me, first of all, Elijah's challenge to God's people? He rebukes Israel for their indecisive double-mindedness. You see in verse 21. In essence, he said, if you know that the Lord is the true God, why are you not following him? Why are you compromising when you know God will not tolerate divided worship? In other words, worshiping both God and Baal. By the way, please understand, you cannot worship God if you are also worshiping someone or something else. He calls this spiritual adultery. God actually created the marriage relationship in order to illustrate for us the intimate and exclusive nature of our relationship with God. Just as a wife expects her husband to keep himself only to her and forsake all others, so God expects us to worship him only and nothing or no one else. Israel is speechless under the truth of Elijah's rebuke, as you can see at the end of verse 21. He then challenges them to decide once and for all on the basis of clear, dramatic proof. You saw that in verses 22 through 24. He is only one prophet of God compared to Baal's 450. Ashtoreth or Astarte's prophets apparently bailed out of this contest. I don't know. They're not mentioned anymore. Elijah makes the challenge. Have the true God send fire from heaven to burn the sacrifice. Would you notice with me here, second of all, Elijah's confident faith in God? He offers Baal's prophets first choice of oxen and first crack at proving their idol's power. Verse 25, he let them go for hours and hours. He laughed at the opposition, knowing they could do nothing against God's power. Verse 27, please notice here the clear proof of what their God, Baal, ultimately Satan, was like. He was cruel, delighted in pain. He was reluctant to answer. He required a price for his favors. Please be aware that Satan will try to get you to think God is like that. Be careful. Back to Elijah. Notice as well that he heaped difficulties in God's way, knowing they would bring God greater glory. He ordered the sacrifice and the wood to be soaked with water. Look at verse 33. He dug a substantial trench around the altar in order to fill it with water, verse 32. He ordered the soaking three times to ensure total inability to burn. Let me pause here for a few minutes to apply what we've learned to our situation today. Do you have the confident faith in God that Elijah demonstrated? Are you fully convinced of God's goodness? Or have you been listening to Satan's lies that he first foisted on Eve in Genesis 3 that tempted her to doubt God's goodness? You see, if you are convinced of God's goodness and wisdom and power, then you will trust God completely in every situation. Just like Elijah trusted God so completely that he confidently asked God for greater and greater things. Not just fire from heaven to burn the sacrifice, but to burn a thoroughly soaked sacrifice and altar, because he delighted in proving God's power and goodness. Do you pray with that kind of faith? We've seen Elijah's challenge to God's people and his confident faith in God. Notice thirdly, Elijah's consistent threefold attitude. Look at verse 36. It began with his humility. Notice what he prayed. Today, let it be known that you are God in Israel. Humility is forgetting yourself, focusing only on God, his purpose, his glory. John the Baptist, whom Jesus in Matthew chapter 11, verse 14 called Elijah who was to come, said in John 3:30, he must increase, but I must decrease. Listen, Christian, cultivate an attitude of humility. See, when your mind is occupied with God and his purposes, then you cannot be occupied with yourself and your plans and desires. Elijah's consistent attitude began with humility, which moved him to submission to God. Notice the next phrase in this verse, and that I am your servant. You and I need to quit spending so much time doing little things for God and spend more time listening to him and obeying what he commands us to do. Very interesting. Sometimes little children will do that with their parents. Their parents tell them to do a certain thing, and the children sort of decide that they will do something else to please mom or dad, but it's not the thing that mom or dad told them to do. And sometimes we sort of fool ourselves, thinking that if we're doing something nice for God, that sort of overrules everything we're disobeying. Be careful to not get deceived that way. There are great joys and benefits to being a servant. My master provides for all my needs. There's absolutely no need to worry about the necessities of life. My master is in control and is responsible for my circumstances. There's absolutely no need to worry about circumstances. My master gives the message for me to deliver, the tasks for me to perform, and is responsible for the outcome. There is absolutely no need for me to worry about the results. It's a wonderful thing to be a servant of the Lord. Elijah's consistent attitude began with humility, which moved him to submission to God, which resulted in his obedience to God. Notice the next phrase, I have done all these things at your word. Elijah's great courage and strength stemmed in part from knowing he was obeying God and carrying out God's plans and purposes. Listen, Christian, your obedience to God's word brings God's blessings into your life, as well as increased trust in him. We've seen Elijah's challenge to God's people, his confident faith in God, and his consistent attitude of humility, submission, and obedience. Notice, fourthly, Elijah's close walk with God. He knew from long experience how to talk with God. James chapter 5, verse 17 points to him as a prime example of a man of effective prayer. Please understand, you won't be able to pray with power during the glorious and fearful opportunities of a Mount Carmel if you haven't first spent time in prayer in your Tishbe, Elijah's hometown, and your Kerith, a place of solitude. Elijah desired God to be glorified in the answer to his prayer. Verse 37, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. We've seen Elijah's challenge to God's people, his confident faith in God, his consistent attitude of humility, submission, and obedience, and his close walk with God. Notice, fifthly, God's superabundant answer. Look at verse 38 and 39. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." God not only answered his prayer for the sacrifice to be consumed, God caused the fire to consume everything, stones and all. God always answers far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. In fact, as Paul reminds us in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. Do you understand that God is like that? Do you know him that well, like Elijah knew him? Notice how the New Testament refers back to Elijah several times. God proved himself to be the only true God, and the people quickly acknowledged it. We've seen Elijah's challenge to God's people, his confident faith in God, his consistent attitude of humility, submission, and obedience, his close walk with God, and God's superabundant answer. Notice finally Elijah's complete victory. Verse 40. Then Elijah said to them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape." So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. Obeying God's commands written down by Moses, Elijah removed the most powerful influences toward idol worship. The prophets of Baal were destroyed. Obviously, in the age of grace in which we live, we have no command to put to death false prophets. But there is a very practical spiritual application for us. You must likewise put to death the influences toward idolatry in your life if you are to have permanent victory over your idols. When you've understood and renounced your own idol worship and have rebuilt your altar of prayer and have drawn near to God and renewed fellowship with him, you need to also make sure you have removed any influence in your life that would cause you to sin in that way again. You know what your idols are. Those things that attract you and take priority over what God wants for you. Think about that. Pray the Lord is bringing to your mind your idols so that you can get rid of them, renounce them. Perhaps it is a strong desire for something that is not God's will for you, or perhaps not God's will for you at this time. Perhaps it's something you are refusing to control or moderate. There are situations or circumstances that make it hard to resist these idols or potential idols that attract you. Ask God for wisdom in removing the things that would influence you to give in to these idols. It may be as simple as putting filters on your electronic devices and having someone you trust, like a parent or spouse or friend, to generate and keep the passcode to remove the temptation for you to surf the internet in inappropriate places. It may be getting your parent to keep your spending money and only let you have what is needed for an approved purchase. Whatever idol tempts you to displace God from his rightful first place in your life and your choices, remove whatever it is that will influence you to put that idol in first place. You may feel you have a particularly difficult situation. Someone asked me once, how do you remove the bad influence of someone you cannot escape, like an unsaved spouse or parent? You do what is right in their presence, no matter what they say or do. Be willing to suffer the consequences of their anger, their punishment, or whatever else they do. But be sure that you don't do anything with a defiant or self-righteous attitude, always with humility and with love. So you do right in their presence, but you also talk about the Lord often and witness to them actively. Remember Elijah's example. So, What is the secret to Elijah's great faith, courage, and power in prayer? He knew God intimately, loved him supremely, trusted him confidently, and committed himself to following his will completely. What about you, Christian? Are you hesitating between two opinions? Are there idols in your life? Or are you following God completely and exclusively? Are you on the Lord's side? Are you surrendered to him, trusting him? Every head bowed, every eye closed, please. Would you respond to whatever the Lord is showing you as a result of having spent this time in his word today? Has the Lord been speaking to your heart about your need to know him better and spend more time in prayer? Are you willing to clearly look, act, and talk like you truly belong to him, even if you are ridiculed for it? Are you willing to witness for him? Will you make up your mind today, as Elijah called Israel to do?